Right, let's go then to the response. We're still busy with that. Let's go to the Minister and South African Police Service. General, you're welcome.
Thanks, Minister. Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, on the issue of on demilitarization, I'll ask General Nguyen to further expand what we're doing from the Transformation Committee and SAPS itself. She'll also deal with the issue of senior managers who have been charged. Nguyen.
Thank you, General Cruiser. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, our Minister. In terms of demilitarization of the police internally within the SAPS, we had to conduct a research. Why there was a need for us to conduct a research is because we were all not sure what is it that is meant by demilitarization. Hence, it became important that we conduct research so that we can have the same understanding. The research is being conducted by research experts from within human resource development, but also they are working together with the research division, which was recently established under management intervention. In terms of the plan, the research has to be finalized by the end of March this year. But further, there was a seminar that was held recently, and the seminar included inviting researchers externally other than the ones that we are having within the organization. What we envisage doing is that after finalization of the research project, we will then ensure that there is implementation of the recommendations thereof. But other than that also, we ensured that our curricula it's reviewed within the training institutions to ensure that issues that talks amongst others human rights, which are in a way related to issues of demilitarization, are being included. As we speak, even the group that will be trained effective from the 1st of April, the new trainees, in their curricula, there will be issues that talks to issues of militarization. Coming to the issue of the steps which were taken, the departmental steps taken against members of the SAPS, internally there were investigations which were conducted. Lieutenant General Jafta, one of the regional commissioners, was appointed to conduct interdepartmental investigations. And from the investigations which were conducted, which consisted of a number of alleged misconduct, where you'll find that a number of members were allegedly involved in a misconduct. The findings of the departmental investigation is that there were no misconduct that could be linked to individual members. And as a result of that investigation, which was conducted against 87 members, they were cleared internally. And then the second part of the investigation, which talks to senior managers, some of whom were specifically mentioned in the report, we could not finalize their investigation. In terms of the recommendations by the Falam Commission was that there is a need for reconstruction of the scene of crime, which is which becomes the responsibility of the IPID. And what is anticipated is that after finalization of the investigation by IPID, they will then forward the recommendations to us, and then we will then do the necessary as expected of us. And also to mention that it's not confined to departmental investigation. There are also criminal investigations against the senior members. I think I'll stop this far. However, I would, if possible, at a later stage, would like to share further what is it that we are doing internally to ensure that we implement the recommendations of the IPED, of the Falam Commission. Thanks, Chair.
Chair Cruiser.
Thanks, Chair. General Masamulu will deal with the decisions at lower levels and what we've done about those and given capacity. He'll also deal with the 242 million in terms of the project plan around those issues and how far we've gone and the priorities. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Good morning, honorable members. Chairperson, with regard to the issues raised about in terms of what we are prioritizing, the honorable Chairperson and members would remember we did send a list of what is prioritized. It's mostly we prioritize equipment which our members currently don't have. You are aware we don't have sufficient water cannons, we don't have sufficient armored vehicles when members have been thrown with stones. So there is, honorable Chairperson and members, a project plan for 2017-18 as well as 18-19. Would remember, Chairperson, that the only money available will only be from the 1st of April coming. So in terms of a plan, we planned. Our supply chain management, they did what they're supposed to do in terms of getting contracts in place. Only after the financial year, then we'll start procuring. But however, I think one, I will have to send again the list of the equipment that we intend procuring for the coming financial year as well as the financial year coming next thereafter.
Will that cater for all the whole amount? The list that you sent us last year, so this is for this coming financial year.
That's correct, Chairperson. It will cater for the amount for the 17-18 and again for the amount of the 18-19. With regard to personnel, it's out of these amounts, is catered for on the baseline of the department. Thanks, Chairperson. And with regard to the question on the decisions, that decisions are not made at executive level. Chairperson, you remember we trained our commanders, the platoon commanders, the company commanders, the unit commanders with the OCT and platoon commanders course to be able to take command. Station commanders and visible police commanders at each station, they also underwent this training where they can, to an extent, make certain decisions. However, as we said, only at first level, the matches that we call first level, which are not, if information indicates they are not going to be violent, maybe it's a crash matching, protest match by school children, crash. So in that regard, it is handled at that level. However, if intelligence indicated otherwise, yes, normally then POP will come in. But we are aware that, yes, some instances are spontaneous, and that's where then the stations normally will take care of the situation until the POP arrives. So, but we have trained all commanders. They don't have to wait for command upwards. They can be able to take a tactical decision on the ground and decide on what to do and what not to do. And also the same matter for advice, we also, the panel of experts, they are also looking at best model in this same regard.
Chair, just to emphasize, the OCT is Operational Commanders Training, so that members know what it means. And maybe just lastly, Chair, we, on the panel of experts, myself, General Kunazi from POPs, General Kunazi from Training, General Jacob from Legal Services, and Brigadier Ali from Public Order sits on that committee. And some of the issues which agreed on before the reports, we then start implementing immediately to ensure that we have a faster movement in terms of that. We don't wait until the report is revealed. Once we agree as a panel and the panel has agreed on any, we then rectify the things immediately and not wait for the reports to come out itself. So things are going very well in terms of that process. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. To add on the issues of training, in this financial year, we already trained, which will include commanders, a total of 7,735 members. And for this coming financial year, we, in terms of our training provisioning plan, we will be training 15,049 members in terms of crowd management, which talks to public order policing. Thank you.
Let's go to the executive director of IPED. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think firstly I'll just try to answer the questions generally as per how they were received, and then I'll hand over to Mr. Sissoko to deal in greater detail with the issues. The first point is interaction between IPED and the National Prosecuting Authority. I think it's important to note that the levels of representation in these engagements have increased and is at the highest level, and the cooperation from the NPA, in particular the National Director of Public Prosecution, has been excellent, and we've been able to establish what needs to be done, deadlines, and to work towards it. So we have a joint team working on it, and they've been giving us guidance. So you can expect that 24th of April, the jointly decided deadline, all our investigations will be handed in related to Marikana. I think connected to this, the questions about budget. I think both, in addition to what Farnham Commission's recommendations are, namely that staffing and resourcing of IPED should be reviewed to ensure that it is able to carry out its functions effectively. The criticism that IPED was not properly prepared and did not handle issues by experts. In addition to that, there is obviously the pronouncement by the highest courts, as myself and the Honourable Minister will know, where mention is made of structural and operational independence. That also is mentioned again in Farnham that we should be properly staffed and resourced. This requires funding. If we have to develop to the level of operational structural independence, we require funding, not only in terms of Farnham Commission reports and pronouncements and recommendations, but generally. And otherwise, the whole purpose of the creation of IPED will fall by the wayside if it's not properly staffed. So that is a key issue. I'm encouraged that General Ngwenya spoke about the investigations that they carried out for their officials. It's strange that they all were cleared, especially when so many people died, and seems like no fault was laid anyway. But more importantly, in future, maybe to involve IPED in those investigations, because that's the whole purpose of the concept of investigative and independent oversight, is so that police don't investigate themselves. So just in future, I would say that. Now I would hand over to Mr. Sissoko to deal in greater detail with the questions that were posed.
Right, Mr. Sissoko.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. The first question from the Honourable Chairperson is linked also to the question by Honourable Sheikh on the delays with regard to the charging of the senior members. I think it's important to indicate, Honourable Chairperson, that there is a team of five prosecutors from the National Prosecuting Authority led by Advocate Tori Pretorius that work with our investigators. They meet every 2 weeks. So the team will then give specific directives on the investigations. Our team of investigators will go and carry out those investigations, come up with the output of that work. It will be reviewed, and then further directives will be given. So the delay is not necessarily the delay, but because of the investigation that has been done, then a statement is obtained, then further queries come out of those investigations. Hence, it looked like there was that kind of a delay. However, as we've indicated, that all these queries that have always been back and forth queried on these specific matters have now been dealt with, and they have been forwarded now to the prosecuting authorities, and we expect that there will be decisions made in that regard. With regard to the issue on identification of victims and next of kin, all of victims and next of kin affected in these matters were identified as per our investigations, and there was interaction with the next of kin in this regard. There was a question by Honourable Matlakane with regard to the problem on the footage. and why it's taking so long to get the footage. There are two aspects to this. The footage is linked to our investigations are those that are with the Lonmin mine itself, which were taken by Lonmin Security. And there are footages that we obtained from media houses, you know, Al Jazeera, ENCA, and different media houses. Now, what had happened is that when we wanted to authenticate these footages, that's when the problem started in terms of getting cooperation from these role players. Then we resorted to obtaining 205 subpoenas to force a cooperation in that regard. It's only then that lawyers from these institutions came forward with a view to try and resolve this matter. There is a progress on the Lonmin side with regard to getting that. In fact, I think in the next week we will be getting footages and all the statements, chain statement connected to that. With regard to the media houses, there is still a challenge there. It's the matter that the prosecutors we're working with are escalating it to the NTPP, because even though there were subpoenas, we received statements which were not compliant, statements that were drafted by the lawyers themselves. So this issue has been escalated, because apparently there is an agreement with media houses, the prosecuting authority, on how to deal with a statement that you must receive from people in the media. So that process is ongoing. We also hope to get a breakthrough soon in that regard. With regard to the question on how many investigators were trained, so far we have trained, Honorable Chairperson, 20 investigators on crime scene. The plan was to train more in this financial year. However, because of budgetary constraints, that could not happen. However, for our plans for the next financial year is to train more. We've got we've identified that we'll have six groups which will attend training, and we hope to train all investigators in this regard. On the issues relating to queries on the assault and torture matters, the DPP Northwest made queries with regard to holding of identification parades and obtaining further statements from witnesses. So that process it's going on, as we've indicated. This it's quite an extensive investigation. So it's something that we also hope to conclude soon. So that is as far as the questions affecting IP is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Soko. Members, we will then go to the second round. Two questions. Let's keep it short, because at 12 o'clock I want to start with the firearms amnesty, or before that. We still need to deal with that item as well, because we've got a presentation from the minister and two interest groups, so I just want to remind members to assist us. Let's go then to the second round. The first two from my side. I just want to know, maybe from SAPS, if we look at the Farlam Commission's recommendations, percentage-wise, what would you say today is the number of recommendations fully implemented? So if we say 60%, 40%, can we quantify that in terms of your research unit and M&E? What would you say would that percentage be today? And maybe the same to IPED as well, if it's possible to ascertain that. Let's go to the other members. Honourable Markey,
thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to start off by expressing my disappointment. You know, I've been sitting here for about over 2 hours, 2.5 hours, but I want to express my disappointment, because I've heard we talk repeatedly about 34 people that had died in Marikana. In my understanding, it's not 34, there were more than 34. But the question that arises is, why do we forget about the police officers that were also killed? Surely they are human beings. Surely they have next of kin. They did not go there because they wanted to go there. They did not go there and do anything that they... All they went there is to, because they were called, they were trying to protect the people that were there. That is all they went there for. Now, I don't know why we are actually, I don't know, I might call it discrimination for me, because they should be treated the same way that the other victims are treated, but very conveniently we tend to forget about the police officers. And I think that is very, very unfair. So my question there is going to be to the minister, what are the benefits that are going to accrue to these police officers that were also mercilessly hacked to death, some of them, in terms of the report that I have read? What happens to them? What happens to their next of kin? And why are we not giving them the same kind of attention that we are giving the other matters? I'm no, in no way saying that one is bigger than the other, but I think they all should be treated equally because all of them have lost their lives, all of them had families, all of them were breadwinners. The second thing is I want to know is that in terms of this next of kin, when are we expecting a finalization of compensation? Is there an interim relief for them at this point in time? And as a form of assistance, are we also going to try and assist them in terms of management or guidance or advice in terms of how they manage their affairs, their financial affairs, or some recommendation? Because it's a serious challenge if large sums of money are given to people who have never seen that before and how they handle it, and then their socioeconomic conditions later will be a problem. You speak about the red blocks of the perception on the communities, and I want you to tell us, now that you've identified the problem, what are you doing about changing that perception and marketing that so that people are going to... And finally, I think I just want to add on all together, is the time frame. That you talk about the time frame, I want, in terms of the complete recommendation, its entirety, its implementation, what is the time frame that we can expect us this to be to comply with? Thank you. Sorry, Chair.
Honourable Ramatakane.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to go back to my previous questions, I don't think the question about resource has been responded to. I asked the question, estimate or guesstimate is 5 million rand to reconstruct the second scene. Both the, I said in response, they respond in general terms, and then I didn't hear much coming from the police particularly. Because we can speak, but if we don't have the money, if the IFA doesn't have this money to reconstruct the scene two, it's not going to complete. So it's going to be a pull down. So I just want to ask with respect that can we get a specific answer on this question? Because otherwise we will leave here without knowing. And I did say that I'm sure if we can have a roundtable discussion between the, much as there's a debate about independency of IFED issue, but insofar as the 5 million is concerned, it's highly impossible that we can't find the 5 million within the budget for that to happen. I'm talking about broad budget now, not necessarily only IFED budget, but relatively small budget. But General Khusa here and General Ngwenya, if they were to sit around the table and look for, surely they can find the 5 million to complete this part. But I'm just not getting an answer to that question, which means we'll come back again, because I think as a committee here, we must be able to make recommendation around this issue. Otherwise, we'll come back again to say we have not received the finances, we have not been able to get the money, so we're not going to be able to complete. So that's the first thing I think that I thought is a follow-up on the first question. And I take that the minister spoke about 3 years period in terms of the outlook of the both the transformation. But the actual, for me, the question I was trying to ask the question insofar as the state plan is concerned. If we say we estimating 1 billion rand to pay for all these costs in terms of the claim, surely from the state side, there would be a plan to say, because we're also going to deal with budget. This is year one, year two, year three, because if you don't have the budget, you won't be able to pay the claims. So I was asking more internal question in terms of our own internal planning for compensation, if there is that kind of words that has been used in the document. What is that plan? Not so much about the broader one. I'm talking about now looking at the affected families around that. That's my question, really, where it was focusing at. So these are the follow-up on the previous question, Chair, if I may. Just ask one question, one more. In one of the recommendations also from the Falun, was this issue about the officers' training of personnel officers in terms of managing, being able to confidence level, whether it's a water cannon, all kinds of things that are managed. I didn't quite get General Ngwenya, what you said, the training that has happened in terms of public order, in terms of that managing that area, how many has been trained, which can be extended to the actual commanders on the ground in terms of making sure that if a command is given, it doesn't run out, spiral out of control in terms of the commanders that are commanding in terms of that. I didn't get that answer properly in terms of what it is. Although I was going to ask about this whole thing about the possible discussion around the body-worn cameras, whether that has been discussed yet around the public order policing in terms of the sea. But I see them out of time. Thank you.
That's the issue when we come back in May. No, when we come back in May budget, we will definitely, on the program too, revisit that. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know. I've got the presentation from SARS that you were given to us. Can we ask questions on that presentation, because they didn't do it? Okay. I've got three questions. In this presentation of SARS, they said they've got 1,084 posts were approved, of which 609 posts were filled. What about the 475 posts? When are they going to fill them? And here they said that the members of POPs must be trained in first aid level 1, 2, and 3. How many members do we train? Because I heard General Mkwenya talking about the training of 7,700 members. I don't know who they trained, of which post, of which training. And there is this thing that saying the Tetra. Tetra was the Treasure Digital Review System has to date only been deployed in Gauteng and Eastern Cape. With the rollout to other provinces delayed due to high cost of such sophisticated system, can they please give clarity? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. China, I must compliment the Honourable Minister. Honourable Minister, you're an expert when it comes to yes-no answers. I must be quite honest, because on the medical experts, it's a yes in one case and no in the other case and so on, but let it be there. Chairperson, you can rule me out of order. Unfortunately, I was busy with a radio interview. I did ask a question on whether other not senior management were prosecuted. Maybe General Kruse did answer. If he did answer, I'm out of order. I will read the minutes. Thank you.
General Gwena indicated no. Nobody was departmentally. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. It's one point and one question, and I think that will cover my two slots allowed. The first is to partly agree with the Minister when he says that the key parts about moving forward from Marikana is to learn the lessons and to resolve the issues as they stand. But I want to add and to emphasize that a key part is also looking back in order discern and enforce accountability for the failures, for the shortcomings, because that's part of informing what the lessons are to be taken out of it. To make a perhaps trite example is that I think most of us would be aware, and it would be our instinct really, is that when children make some sort of a mess, if children are playing somewhere and you hear a loud crash, boom, bang, and you walk in as the adults and there's some sort of big problem, the first question is, who did this, right? It's not just, oh, there's a mess, let's clean it up and move on. No, who did this? Because we need to get to the bottom of the issue and to address that and to ensure there's accountability. So, as I would say to the minister, that's also a key aspect to keep on the radar. And that's why the members are asking questions like, who has faced departmental action? Who is facing criminal investigation? And I will add the point as well that has not come up yet, is that there's, although it was not in the scope of the Farnham Commission, there are still questions around the role and the culpability of political office bearers in the Marikana massacre. The then Minister of Mining, the then Minister of Police, and although he wasn't in a position then, the current Deputy President. Those are questions that are still on the public mind, in the public discourse, and we haven't got answers or accountability to that, and that is not something to be forgotten. My question, Chairperson, is there was a claim made in the first presentation that National Instruction 4 of 2014 is the intervention taken by the SAPS to address the recommendation from the Commission that the Minister and the National Commissioner must take care when making statements or addressing SAPS members not to say anything which might have the effect of closing the ranks or discouraging disclosure by SAPS members when there are investigations. I've paged through the national instruction, and I am not quite seeing which parts of the instruction addresses the recommendation as it's worded and as I understand it directly. So I just wanted to ask if I can get a citation of paragraph, section, and subsection as to which parts of this national instruction addresses the issue of how public statements and debriefings and so on by the minister or by SAPS management mitigates against the effects of closing of ranks and discouraging disclosure, because I'm not seeing it. If it's there, I would just like to be referred to it. Thanks, Chair.
You're fine.
Just I'll be very quick. But Honourable Minister, I heard you very well. But I think on this question of transformation, you'll agree with me, Honourable Minister, that transformation means many things to many people. Now, it will depend from which angle one comes from. You know, it quickly reminded me, Chairperson, of the situation in World Trade Center during the negotiations when the right wingers came fully armed to that area. I then said, with regard to the Marikana situation, if then those right wingers were black, they would definitely be decimated into pieces because they had no value. According to the structural situation of South Africa, the history where a black person comes from here. And even the situation in Marikana, when I bought a film of what happened there, when I could see black officers killing their black people like Western dogs, and I just realized the effects of colonial syndrome. As one professor said, in colonies of existence, societies are very violent, and the security forces may be being central in that particular situation. Like, I don't want to waste time, but I'm just trying to analyze that because policing in South Africa comes from afar in terms of our history.
their role in the, in fact, in the whole war, okay, in the whole war of apartheid. They were more at the forefront than even soldiers. They killed more people than the soldiers did. That's why General Constant Viljoen ended up pulling back, saying that no, he will have to observe the rules of engagement. But then you will find that police had to go to the all out much more than soldiers did. I was just trying to remind or make us reflect, because I'm touched by what General is saying, that no, we never knew what this concept of demilitarization means, when in fact we have got a transformation committee which ought to be feeding to management to say these are the target points. Then these are the very worrisome points, Chairperson, which we as the committee we must grapple with very strongly, because we will call a transformation when in fact we are losing we are losing what needs to be done. Managers cannot transform themselves. Managers ought to be fed from the transformation committee of targets that need to be met. And the general is honestly presenting the matter to us, saying that we did not, we had to conduct a research in our own understanding. That talks a million word statement. Sure, no, but Chairperson, time, yes, but I am worried about this. If and only if, Chairperson, we are serious about our oversight, effective oversight work as this committee, we must actually take that into account to say, what is the relationship between the transformation committee and the management, so that we don't actually then come to what. Otherwise, Chairperson, we will see transformation, but it will never be seen. Then, lastly, Chairperson, you know, if you go to page 11 of IPID, page 10 of IPID, there's this investigation progress body in the Kenta, how do you pronounce that name, I don't know. If then police management will say that there was no wrongdoing found in terms of the line of operation of members, yet IPID is saying there was a body that lied in police custody that was never reported, which means there was no report found. And senior management of police is saying, no, there was nothing wrong found. That's why then I was saying, Chairperson, as a committee, we must then be careful whether we are told everything so that we can make political interventions, or we are told what we want to hear, so that we are just going to wake up like the situation that appeared in SAPC when everything was finished. That ought to be the hope of the nation. Thank you.
No, I'm showing you, we're going to call the international panel. We're going to call the judge in May and June to come to the committee to brief us, and also the deputy minister. So don't worry, we will come to that. Honorable Mark, you're the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question from my side about the training and the numbers that have been mentioned. It just triggered my mind that I'm always worried about the training of detectives. What numbers are there in these people that are being trained? And we talked about headhunting, those that have retired, those that have resigned. Where is that process? How many have been pulled in back? At what levels? Did we pull in only constables, or do we have generals? Or I just wanted to understand, because the issue of detectives needs to be addressed, and we always hammer on it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I think that is again a big topic, and again, I think when Program 3 is coming in May, the first week, we can deal extensively, but it's just maybe a broad response to that. Let's go to the final responses then from SAPS and IPED. Thank you, Minister, and then the Executive Director.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. you know, some of the questions I would like to Mr. Professor to respond to them. For instance, the first question on the what percentage of the Falun Commission recommendations have been implemented and so on. I think she can respond to that. You know, some other issues such as your POPs training posts that have been filled and whatever and so on or not filled. Tetra digital radio and so on, and so the range of these questions. And the I think one of the critical questions is the question by Honorable Imam Sheikh on the question of benefits to the next of kin, but particularly focusing on the police officers that were also killed there. The disappointment. Now, Mr. Sheikh Imam is pretty shorter than you are, so I can't see him. Please. Look, the issue of your disappointment, and that's part of the problem, because I think as a country we've allowed a particular narrative over the years since the occurrence of this particular tragedy. The question of the 34 versus the 44 and so on, the number. Now, I'm saying it's unfortunate because we tended to angle into the issue largely from a narrow sort of political sort of angles, in a sense, rather than looking at the broader aspects of ourselves being human and these being human lives. I think that's the shortfall of this particular problem. So I would think that it is something that yourselves, as the people responsible for political leadership in our society, must also begin to correct this. It's not something that it can only be corrected by the institution of policing or the police and whatever. So it's something that talks to whether or not are we able to reflect on issues on our social circumstance in the most balanced manner and a truthful kind of manner ever possible when it comes to issues and so forth. So I think it's for me that's where the defect lies insofar as this issue of the 34 people and nothing is being said about other people that died prior to the 34. Now, the finalization of compensation for the next of kin, I think I reflected on this point, and you also spoke about time frames, and Honorable Ramaswamy spoke about the issue of affected families. Now, and the point I was making earlier on Ramaswamy is a simple one, is that we have a litigation process as we speak. Now, the question of when do you then finalize is determined largely by the legal teams, both on our side and on the side of the victims and so on, arriving at an arrangement to settle on issues and so on and settle them. So that's the dependency there. But I can also allude to the fact that you also now have other claimants that are ready to settle with the state. And in fact, I can't remember when, but I think it should have been 3 weeks ago. We were arranging an event in Marikana, but because of other technical kind of issues that also arose from the provincial side, we then decided we needed to reschedule that particular sort of event, which would have also included the victims that are residing in the area and those that have entered into the arrangement to settle with ourselves there and so on. So there is that particular development, and there are others also that have already just hinted that they want to also to move in the similar direction and so on. So our view is that we hope first and foremost that gets sorted out, the sooner the better. But also would like to see the finalization of these particular matters, you know, also the sooner the better, really, so that we do not keep on or have something like this lingering up and about for an extended period of time and so on, instead of sorting out whatever that we need to sort out. There is the issue of Honorable Mbele, I was not saying that there shouldn't be accountability. Accountability, yes, there has got to be. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be looking back, because looking back is a point of reference in determining your future and how you need to conceptualize the future and so forth. So I accept that. The only point, and in fact this intervention that you made is a much more better intervention than the one that you made earlier on. You know, the one that you made earlier on was, you know, almost a despondent kind of intervention. And that's what we can't afford to be, in a sense. And that's what I was cautioning against, that despondency is not going to help us, you know, and wailing about had it not been this, and if whatever and so on, it could have been that and so forth and stuff like that. So I think this intervention that you're then making now is a useful one, because indeed you do need to have accountability, but that accountability must also be informed by a reflection of what happened in the past. And we need to be consistent also with the issue of accountability and not be opportunistic about it. So that, you know, accountability must be seen not just simply as an act, but a fundamental principle to be upheld at all material times, regardless of points of convenience or whatever and so forth. We need to, you know, be able to do that. So I firmly agree with you on that question. Now, where I disagree with you is when you start saying in the public mind there is the issue of the role of a capability of a political office bearers. I'm not too sure which public is this and so on, but nevertheless, the reason why, because, you know, for instance, the implications of what you're saying, it then begins to sound like you must then have two distinct sort of processes. The reason why you had a judicial commission in place, it was acting on the basis of public interest to do so. Now, and every matter relating to the tragedy in Marigana was then interrogated at that particular level, including, by the way, some of these people that you refer to as political office bearers. And the commission itself, in its wise counsel, pronounced on this particular matter, whether it pronounced in favor of what we like or what we don't like, that's not the issue. The issue is that, you know, the commission interrogated the individuals concerned and the evidence provided and so forth, and arrived at a particular position in relation to that. And I think as society, given that these are our institutions who act on our behalf, then it would help not to second-guess them. As in the famous words of some other people. So it would help not to second-guess them, really. So in my view, that matter has been attended to. So we can't then say there is that matter that is outstanding, because if you say that it is outstanding, you're then implying that the commission never dealt with this particular matter, never interrogated the evidence before it, and the individual's consent never appeared before that this very same commission and so on. So I think we need to be quite careful about that. Look, Honourable Mtlongo, you are raising... Where is he? Where are they? You are just a terrible combination. You are short, you are too black, and else, and in front of you there is a big police officer seated there. So it's difficult to see you. But nevertheless, I think you're raising a critical point. Look, the issue of transformation, I mean, as you say, it can mean different things to different people and so on, but the essence of it in this particular instance is that it's one of the concepts that fall within the broader definition of change management, broadly speaking. And essentially it's about, you know, whether positioning and repositioning and moving an institution from one level to another level and so on. Now, in this instance, when we say that some of the recommendations or the totality of the recommendations by the Fulham Commission also provide this particular platform for change management and transformation in the police service, it's exactly just that. Because if you begin to respond to a number of those issues, but also act on them, then you're beginning to redefine the institution itself and so on. So that's the point here. I think the second point is that indeed, you know, police can transform themselves. You know, and that's why, and I think also, without becoming a spokesperson for this, for the Fulham Commission, I suspect that the mere fact that the Commission arrived at the position that said we needed to put together a panel of experts to begin to look into a variety of these particular issues, it's precisely because of this point that you're raising, that they can transform themselves. So you need people that, yes, are experienced, but are also outside of the polluted environment and so on, and therefore can be objectively be out there and be able to deal with the issues as identified by the Commission. So I think I agree with you. The second issue that you're raising, the colonial syndrome, I hope you do realize that that's not an issue that you can only confine to the police. It's a broader problem that ourselves as progressive forces within society have got to contend with and deal with that issue. This country has got a very long history of the dehumanization of the African in particular. And I think it is something that we have got to speak to, and we have got to take active steps to deal with that particular issue. So, and this dehumanization takes different forms. For an example, the one general example is the manner in which African and black life is generally viewed in relation to the rest in the within our populace. And the fact of the matter is that we do need to deal with that. Now, you will recall that this country has that history precisely because of colonialism and colonialism of a special type. And I think the concept that you're quite familiar with. And basically, this colonialism of a special type also yielded its own particular set of results. And this is what Lenin would have referred to as a force of habit also amongst the oppressed, in a sense. Now, the fact of the matter is that and what I'm trying to say here is that it's a broader, conceptual issue that we have got to confront. we have got to confront, for an example, as black as I am, but I think you are too black, for an example. You know. and perhaps I could also go beyond that point and think that because I think that you're too black, it also means that you have a shrunken level of intelligence. You know, black as I am. You know, and these are the things that we've got to be truthful and be able to confront head on, because the expectation is that sometimes it is something that must be experienced by you from those that have got stretched hairlines, for an example. Now, so it's not a complex issue, but I'm saying I'm trying to reflect on the enormity of the challenge that we have in society, and it talks to the issue of social transformation and so forth. And it is useful to always remind ourselves that we still, you know, suffer from this kind of a hangover, the devalue of human life, but also on racial lines and so forth. And particularly, I think we have got to be deliberate in redefining the fate and the future of the African in our society. So, broadly speaking, I think it is something that I agree with you from that point of view. But you know, I'm also saying, and I don't want to sound like I'm being defensive here or defending the police necessarily, is that the problem is far beyond police attitude and conduct. For instance, question of black officers firing on black citizens and stuff like that. It's far beyond that. It's a problem that engulfs our society in general. So I would like the Honourable Chair to. I'd like to ask. Firstly, I think let me ask Nesha to deal with the question. Ms. Sopasat, sorry, to deal with the question of the percentage issue that the chair raised, and the rest of the other issues. Of course, I think we have officers that can also respond to that. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Right. If we can have just the responses very brief, we're eating into the time of the other presentations. So, yeah, thanks.
Okay, very briefly, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, just to give you from A to G, A as will be responded by IPED in terms of the percentage of completion of reports. B, I would say 100% because 8, 9 and 10 have been concluded in terms of strategy and the panel work, so we've implemented that. As far as the strategies are being developed for the interim reports to the Minister, and there's an execution phase. So you look at it from two phases. On strategy phase, there's 100%, and to the extent of the work of implementation plans, it's 30% in terms of the work done by the Ministerial Transformation Task Team. C, it would be 30% respectively. D, 80 to 90%. E, as it relates to police equipment, will be 30%. F, on the first aid, is 40%. And then G, in terms of accountability, as illustrated in the media reports that followed on after the Marikana incident, is 100%.
Other responses? Thanks, Chair. Chairman Grenner will respond to the issue of the two members, the issue of posts and number of vacancies, the issue of training and first aid training, and then the issue of re-enlistment.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe one to firstly contextualize the issue of not understanding demilitarization. It is our view that when we moved away from the ranks of commissioner, for example, to general, that was not militarizing the organization, because we never changed in terms of socialization, culture, except that there were a few incidents. Hence, it necessitated that we conduct a research so that we can have an understanding exactly of what is expected of us. Coming to the issue of the two deceased members who died during the Marikana incident, within the SAPS, we have got a death grant, which is money that is paid out to the families when a member would have died in line of duty and executing duties. Therefore, these members qualified for the 250,000, which was immediately paid out to the family, but also the benefits that goes with a termination of a member were also dealt with. And further, we ensured that members are included in the roll of honor and are commemorated when we commemorate our fallen heroes in September. And also the children of those members are being taken care of in terms of the SAPS Education Trust Fund. These members, like any other members, died in line of duty. Hence, within the organization, we did the necessary. On the issue of the training of POP members, the breakdown, in terms of the water cannons, we trained 33. And then in terms of the 44 millimeters grenade launchers, we trained 62. The video operators, we trained 60. That big figure that I have given would have included members that are attached to POP, but also members who would have been trained so that whenever there is a need, we are able to deploy them to assist. And amongst other members is the group of members who completed their basic training last year in December, because their basic training included 3 weeks of crowd management. The issue of the first aid training, we have got three levels, so which is level 1, level 2, and level 3. In terms of level 1, we trained 109. In terms of level 2, we trained 348. In terms of level 3, we trained 290. We further registered a project within human resource development to ensure that the process of training members in terms of first aid is accelerated. Other than the two members who lost their lives at the Marikana incident, within the SAPS, we also ensured that all members who were involved receive counseling from our employee health and wellness component. It has been an ongoing process whereby we even went further to have organizational diagnosis which focused on 200 members, and one can announce that we have since finalized the organizational diagnosis, and it was finalized in December, and we have started implementing. We came up with a program to ensure that there is implementation of the outcome of the organizational diagnosis. Like I indicated, it is ongoing. Amongst members who were involved in the Marikana incident, some of the members felt they could not cope even after they've been counseled intensively by our social workers, psychologists, and chaplains. And a total of four members were redeployed to other in environments where they preferred, they felt they can still cope. And then we have four members who resigned, and we had five members who resigned, but then they reapplied and they were re-enlisted. And then we had the two members who were retired, emanating from post-traumatic stress disorder. Even after the counseling, they could not cope. But also within the organization, we went further to register a project in the Northwest that focuses on public order members. We envisage a situation that the blueprint that will have been developed after the finalization of the project will assist us in ensuring that we roll out nationally. The project has got five focus areas, which are in the interest of time, I won't be sharing, but believe at some stage we'll be able to share with the committee to say this is what the project delivered to us, and we'll be rolling this nationally to ensure that our members are fully capacitated. But also within the annual performance plan of the SAPS, the coming financial year, the issue of capacitating public order policing is a priority. What it means is that we are going to be ensuring that 98% of the posts within public order policing are filled. Yes, we had advertised 1,084 posts, of which 600 were filled. The rest of the posts will be filled in the next financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Mawela, 4 of 2014.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members. National Instruction 4 of 2014, paragraph 10, subparagraph 3, seek to empower the operational command, overall operational commander, to know and understand their roles and responsibilities, not to stand on the shaky ground whereby they can be influenced by anybody. So if you read that paragraph, subparagraph 3, it reads as follows. The overall commander is an overall commander of the specific operation for which he or she is designated and is responsible for all actions taken and for all the persons and resources deployed to manage that particular operation. So if the commander understands their roles and responsibilities, surely they cannot be influenced by anybody outside that operation. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. The last to the first on TETRA. In Gauteng, we have a fully functioning system with a maintenance plan in place, so it's ongoing. In the Eastern Cape, the first phase is completed. The TMS is busy with the issue of implementing the rest of the phases. They're also looking at cheaper technology because we know this thing is very expensive. Is there new technology emerging in the world? So they're busy with a plan which we will present to management in terms of how we take forward the issue of communication throughout the country itself. Then there's the issue of IPED, which seems to come up again. As far as I know, money are voted to departments, and then they're given to programs itself. And any verification of that, we have to go through a process with Treasury. We may not just move money itself, as we're aware of. So if there's a request, I think that process will have to then kick in itself. Thank you very much.
All the SAP's responses, let's go to IPED.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to recommendation implementation percentage, we've indicated that the body in the counter is done, matter sitting with the DPP. The investigation on the senior officer, General Naidu, with regard to medical attention that was diverted and the shooting incident, that matter is also done, sitting with the NPA. And the matter relating to misleading the commission and the recording of the management, National Management Forum, that is also done, sitting with the Advocate Pretorius. And the two matters that are outstanding is the further investigation on Scene 1 and Scene 2, which we've agreed with the NPA that they will be concluded on the 24th. However, with regard to the Scene 2, the issue with regard to the reconstruction, that is the one that is problematic, as we've indicated, because it needs funding, which we don't have. I'm also hastening to indicate, Chairperson, that the Executive Director wrote again to Treasury on the 27th of February with regard to this issue and requesting that we really need funding to be able to complete this part of our investigation. After we had met with the NTPP, and we unfortunately have not received any favorable response thus far. Thank you, Chair.
Is that the final report? Right, thank you very much to the South African Police and IPED in terms of the report today. I think progress is evident in certain areas, but in some areas we really not moved where we should be. So I think what we will do is that we will in June call the international panel's chair as well as the deputy minister, and I think we must even call the NPA in the case of IPED as well to come and give us a briefing on where we are so that this project can be concluded with speed. Of course, some of the issues is long term, as indicated by the Executive Authority, but it's vital that in terms of the budget that's allocated this year, that POPs use that money to ensure that the farm recommendations are implemented. And I think if there's additional needs, maybe even in October, the committee will support it. In terms of the IPED budget, it's quite critical that IPED must have the money to fulfill the mandate, and it's also important that they have the money to complete the project in terms of marijuana. So that is an issue in the beginning of May. We as a committee will have to deal with it, and we will also have to call Treasury, maybe the chief director, dealing with that, that we can see what can be done. Because the dilemma is, if that project is not completed, the farm recommendations will not be concluded, and we need to meet to conclusion. So thank you very much, members, for attending. We will now we will give a 3-minute break just to those members who want to leave. They are welcome. Then we will go immediately then to the presentation on the National Firearms Amnesty, and if the two presenters also from Gun Free South Africa as well as the Hunters Association also can join in front, then we can proceed. So 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
I think she's got a presentation. So you've got anyone with a presentation? She's got a paper.